It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. 48 degrees in Kodiak under partly cloudy skies. It's turning out to be a beautiful day. Out at the airport, they are showing east winds at 10 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility, and 71% humidity. Coming up on the Midday Report, the city of Kodiak has officially been redesignated as a Coast Guard city. The rate of deaths due to drinking alcohol has nearly doubled in a two-year period in Alaska. And bird flu, it's back. Those stories plus education funding after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The president and House Speaker's compromise to raise the debt ceiling is not a done deal yet. Enough members of the various political factions of Congress have to sign off on it this week before the federal government defaults on its financial obligations. Speaker Kevin McCarthy is trying to shore up votes among Republicans, including members of the hard right Freedom Caucus.
When the Freedom Caucus talks about wants the spending back to 2022, the non-defense is back lower than 2022. Veterans get more money and defense gets more money.
The proposal includes a provision about student loans. If the legislation passes, the current pause on payments and interest will end in late August. NPR's Alyssa Natwarney reports the freeze was always intended to end.
Borrowers haven't had to pay their monthly loan payments or any interest since the beginning of the pandemic. The pause was started and extended under former President Donald Trump, and then extended again under President Biden. But even before Sunday's deal between Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, the Education Department was readying the return to repayment with a plan to end the pause either in that same timeline as the New Deal at the end of August or after the Supreme Court rules on two cases challenging Biden's plan to forgive up to $20,000 of student debt. Those court decisions are expected in June or early July. The Biden-McCarthy debt limit deal now heads to Congress for a vote. Alyssa Nadworny, NPR News.
Russia says it shot down 5 drones over Moscow. It accuses Ukraine of carrying out a terrorist attack. As NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports, the U.S. says it is looking into the reports and points out that more than a year into Russia's invasion, President Vladimir Putin's military is still carrying out strikes on Ukraine's capital.
The State Department says the U.S. does not, as a general matter, support any attacks inside Russia. Officials had no direct comment about Russia's claims that Ukraine was behind several drone attacks that caused some light damage in Moscow. A State Department spokesman would only say the U.S. is still gathering information about that. The statement goes on to say that Russia has carried out 17 rounds of airstrikes on Kyiv, many of which damaged civilian areas in the Ukrainian capital. The U.S. says Russia started this war against Ukraine and could end it by withdrawing its forces. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
From self-made billionaire to federal prison, Elizabeth Holmes, the founder of the collapsed blood testing startup Theranos, has surrendered to authorities in Texas to begin serving her 11-year sentence for defrauding investors. The Carter family has announced that former First Lady Rosalynn Carter has dementia. The 95-year-old remains at home with her 98-year-old husband, former President Jimmy Carter. He has been receiving hospice care since February. The couple has been married for nearly 77 years. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The city of Kodiak has officially been redesignated as a Coast Guard city. Base Kodiak's commanding officer, Captain Ed Hernays, presented city council members with the proclamation at Thursday night's meeting.
I honestly feel like this partnership is just so enriched, and a lot of integration between our Coast Guard community and the city, and it really means a great deal for us to redesignate Kodiak as a Coast Guard city.
Coast Guard cities must demonstrate the community's connection with Coast Guard members and their families, and ways the community makes them feel at home in their home away from home, according to the Coast Guard's website. The application process to be certified as a Coast Guard city can take up to a year and includes letters of support from city staff and Coast Guard personnel. Certification lasts 5 years. Kodiak was first designated as a Coast Guard city back in 2007. It's one of nearly 30 communities nationwide recognized for their unique connections with the Coast Guard. Four other municipalities in Alaska are also designated as Coast Guard cities. The rate of deaths due to drinking alcohol nearly doubled over a two-year period in Alaska. That's based on data from the Alaska Department of Health. Those years, from 2019 to 2021, included the start of COVID. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Alaska has one of the highest rates of binge drinking in the country. Sarah Platt has a background in marriage and family therapy. She works for Recover Alaska, an organization trying to reduce excessive drinking and its harms. She isn't surprised by the increase in drinking deaths.
Thinking of the pandemic, I think that is a big piece, is that people didn't have as many opportunities to connect, were more isolated.
Platt says that the opposite of addiction is connection. She says an environment with lots of activity choices and ways to connect with people without alcohol can play a role in lower rates of substance use. In Iceland, programs to reduce drinking focused on community interventions, like creating work and sports programs and encouraging parental involvement.
You know, binge drinking is not a person problem, it's a community problem.
She says she's hopeful that as the world opens up socially, rates of deaths from drinking will subside. And if people in a community are concerned about how much others are drinking, she says there's lots they can do.
What low barrier wellness activities could I offer community members? What can I talk to about my local representative around policy? What can I do at my workplace to make it so it's not so stigmatizing to reach out and get care?
Rosa Avila is a public health scientist for Alaska's health department. She says the pandemic influenced social changes that may relate to excessive alcohol use.
You know, if people are experiencing a lot of stress from loss of job and having your kids at home all the time, that there might be other changes like in alcohol use. But it's hard to tease out with the numbers how much of that is due to the pandemic or other factors.
Those deaths include people who die from alcohol poisoning, and it includes people who die from alcohol-related causes like liver disease. Avila says that in the fall, health data will be available from 2022. That will help the state health department understand more about rates of Alaskans dying from alcohol.
We'll see this next with 2022 data and 2023 data, whether those trends are being sustained or if they're going to taper down. So I think a lot of it remains to be seen.
But it will take longer to see data from 2023, when many COVID restrictions were fully lifted. That will be when public health scientists get a fuller picture of drinking deaths over the years most affected by the COVID pandemic. Platt with Recover Alaska says that people drinking in excess are often using alcohol as a coping mechanism, and they can feel defensive if others are asking them to give that up. So she suggests that concerned friends and family talk instead about how alcohol use is interfering with connection.
I want to be able to connect with you more, and this is getting in the way of us connecting. And I'm wondering if maybe you want to call somebody together or reach out and kind of see if there's any other options.
Family and friends can play an important role in encouraging people to think about how much they're drinking. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Last spring, some cases of highly pathogenic avian influenza were detected in migratory birds in Alaska. This spring, it is back again. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello has been in touch with biologists in the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge over the weekend and has this story.
The bird flu has been detected in a migratory bird in western Alaska. Last Thursday, scientists found the first casualty from the highly pathogenic avian influenza. It was a cackling goose. Brian Daniels is the lead waterfowl biologist at the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge.
So it is here in the Yukon Delta again. We did find a bird that succumbed to avian influenza with all the normal signs of the neurological disorder swinging its head around, and then next day being dead, looking like it's just sleeping on a pond. So we've had our first casualty detected.
Daniels advises hunters to cook their game to at least 265 degrees to kill any viruses that might be in the meat. He also wants to remind hunters to practice basic sanitary practices. This includes washing your hands after you handle the game first. No eating, smoking, or chewing until after you do so. You don't want to be putting anything in or near your mouth.
From birds that may be affected, it is still safe to go catch birds this spring. Just need to be cautious that some birds might be sick and not have any symptoms, show any symptoms. But if birds are showing symptoms, leave them be and don't eat them.
Daniels recently returned to Bethel after spending 9 days studying the nesting of different waterfowl, primarily emperor geese and speckled eiders at one of the research camps out on the coast.
And their timing is right on time for the historic mean from the 1980s until present of initiating their nest, starting to lay eggs in the last week of May. But we're about a week later than what we've seen in the last 8 or 9 years.
Daniel says that even though the river breakup was later than usual, birds are starting to nest, which means egging will begin soon. Daniels is working with the Association of Village Council Presidents, or AVCP, to select a date for the 30-day closure that is mandated in the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which prohibits the taking, which includes killing, capturing, selling, trading, and transporting, of protected migratory bird species without prior authorization by the Department of Interior's U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
It's meant to protect birds so they aren't disturbed while they're nesting, so that they can incubate and hatch their young for 30 days and start rearing their young. And so the refuge works with AVCP, the Alaska Village Council of Presidents here in Bethel, to set that date.
Daniel says that the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge talks to subsistence hunters and gatherers on the coast and throughout the Delta to ensure that people are getting opportunities to collect eggs and catch birds prior to setting the date.
But it's a fine line to ensure that we protect the birds as well as providing the opportunity. So we work together to set that time period. And so I'm talking with them right now to set that, now that we know when birds are laying and when they should start incubating their eggs next week probably.
They will be conducting aerial bird surveys for population assessment for all species during the next week or up to a week and a half, according to Daniels.
So you might be seeing some low-flying aircraft across Yukon Delta for those surveys.
For the birders in the YK Delta, Daniel says that there has been a considerable increase in the number of passerines and insectivores to watch out for. He has seen a lot of tree swallows and cliff swallows, as well as snipes and shorebirds. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez-Cuello.
The budget that the Alaska legislature passed during its one-day special session included a one-time school funding boost of $175 million. But school district leaders and many legislators were hoping for something a little more permanent, a big increase to the per-student funding schools get from the state every year. And as KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, they say one-time funding won't resolve ongoing budget problems.
Jared Bryant is the superintendent of the Anchorage School District. He says his district may put their share of the one-time funding into savings in anticipation of a deficit in 2025.
until we make structural reform to school funding, we'll always be in these conversations where we're talking about deficits and budget cuts and pink slips and layoffs.
Juneau school district officials agree that the lack of a permanent funding increase makes it hard to plan ahead. Cassie Olin, Director of Administrative Services, says the district likely won't put the money to new recurring costs, like hiring teachers. Instead, they might spend it on online classroom materials or maintenance projects.
We like to try to focus on non-personnel expenses in the additional funding, something that we don't necessarily have to have in the following years, because you don't want to put, you know, $5 million of positions into the district's budget and then turn around next year, and if nothing happens, then those $5 million worth of positions now have to be laid off.
Without a permanent funding increase, districts may have to resolve deficits in other ways, like closing schools, making class sizes bigger, and reducing bus service. Those are the kinds of budget decisions legislators cited when pushing for a permanent increase in school funding this session. Anchorage Democratic Senator Lukey Tobin chaired the Senate Education Committee. She advocated for the Senate version of a bill to increase the base student allocation by $680.
I think we, in Senate Education and again in Senate Finance, were able to really articulate why an increase under the BSA was the best, most equitable and fair way to support our education system.
Instead, it will only go up by $30, an increase Governor Mike Dunleavy approved last year. Tobin says, barring a significant increase to the base student allocation, a one-time funding boost was the next best option. She called it a safety valve to hold schools over until the legislature can resume talks about a permanent increase next year. Tobin says she's feeling optimistic that Dunleavy will approve the one-time boost.
I know that he is an advocate for our schools. I know that he recognizes the value of a good quality public education, and I'm hopeful that he sees this balanced budget and uses his veto pen very little.
As they wait to find out, school boards and district administrators around the state will meet in the coming weeks to discuss next steps. With help from Tim Rocky in Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas in Juneau.
Juneau's Planning Commission is not supporting the city's new hazard maps or the proposed policy that would regulate developments in hazard zones. The new maps were commissioned in 2018 and would replace the city's current maps, which were created in the 70s. They have not been adopted by the Assembly yet, but they indicate that nearly half of the homes and buildings in downtown Juneau are in places threatened by an avalanche or landslide. The commission took public testimony at its meeting Tuesday evening before recommending that the Assembly nix the policy altogether. Most of the residents who testified were opposed to the policy, which would limit new development in severe hazard zones. It wouldn't totally prohibit new building projects, but it would make them harder. For most projects, property owners would have to hire a private engineer to do an additional study of their building site. Residents like Mary Alice McKean said, that would be too costly for most people.
The city is taking the burden, the financial burden of providing site-specific analysis and putting it on the property owner.
Deputy Planning Chair Mandy Cole and the rest of the commission were swayed by the testimony.
Does it make me a little sleepless at night that there's a possibility that there could be an avalanche or landslide? Of course. And I don't know that I have enough to outweigh all of those concerns on the other side to suggest a policy.
Only one resident showed up to support the ordinance and the maps. Albert Shaw brought up two of the city's biggest natural disasters.
I'm one of the last persons standing who saw the mud against the cold storage in 1936. It killed people. I also was on the city council when Barron's Avenue came down. Just because nothing's happened in 60 years doesn't mean something won't happen soon.
Ultimately, the commission felt the concerns from the policy's opponents outweighed its potential benefit for public safety. The Assembly will still have the final say. They will consider the ordinance and Planning Commission's recommendation at a future meeting.
The American consumer remains confident, but that confidence is faltering. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The Consumer Confidence Index receded in May, but that decline came from a revised higher point in April. The index from the Conference Board think tank still shows a generally upbeat mood, but survey respondents are increasingly worried about the potential for a recession. Home prices rebounded in March for the second month in a row, reversing a steady decline that had started last June. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index advanced about 0.5% compared to February after accounting for seasonal variations. A new single-aisle twin-engine commercial jet took its maiden voyage over the weekend. The C919 is made by the state-backed Commercial Aviation Corporation of China, which hopes to compete with Boeing and Airbus. I'm Novosafa with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate investment and technology. See a brighter way.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 30th day of May, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:20. It will set again at 10:54. That will give us 17 hours and 34 minutes of daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 76 degrees set in 1993. Our record low was 31 set in 1966. Currently 48 degrees under partly cloudy skies. It is a remarkably beautiful day here in Kodiak. At the airport, they have east winds at 10 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility, and 71% humidity. The Weather Service is insisting there's a 30% chance of rain for the rest of the day, mainly after 2 this afternoon. Cloudy skies, high near 46, and southeast winds to 5. For tonight, a 50% chance of rain with cloudy skies and a low of 41 with east winds to 10. And for tomorrow, a 40% chance of rain with mostly cloudy skies, high near 51 and north winds to 10. But after some scattered showers on Wednesday night and mostly cloudy skies, Thursday promises to be partly sunny, as does Friday, Saturday, and even Sunday. Looking at our local tides, we just had a high tide an hour ago here on the east side. Our next low tide will be at 5:03 p.m. and be 1.7 feet, followed by a high tide at 11:35 p.m. of 7.6 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will be at 5:54 p.m. That will be a 3-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at just after midnight, 12:07 a.m. of 12.9 feet. On the west side, you just had a high tide at 11:55. That was a 9.9-foot tide. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles offshore. Northwest 15 today, becoming south this afternoon and seas to 4 feet. East 15 tonight and seas to 3 feet. And northeast 20 tomorrow, seas to 4 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 20 today, seas to 4 feet. Northeast 20 tonight, seas building to 5 feet after midnight. And northeast 20 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10. 4-foot seas subsiding to 2 feet in the afternoon tomorrow in the Shelikof. Well, things going on at the Kodiak Public Library include tomorrow's Lego Club. That starts at 3:30 p.m. Kids under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Also, the Chess Club is meeting on Thursday at 3 p.m. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills. No experience is necessary, and it's open to all ages. And don't forget, Saturdays are library hive checks. That happens at 10:15 a.m., and kids under 5 need to watch from inside. Kids under 13 should be supervised by a parent or guardian. And if you've already attended a hive check, please wait till Friday to sign up to give others a chance. Call the library at 486-8686 to sign up for your spot. Library hours are Monday, Friday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesday and Thursday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. AMSI is conducting another fishing vessel drill conductor class in Kodiak, starting tomorrow. Tomorrow and the next day from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center. The cost for the class is free for Kodiak commercial fishing. fleet, and 225, including sales tax, for all others. This class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. You can register online at www.amsea.org or call them on the phone at 907-747-3287. Attention, Kodiak High School class of 1973. Join them for a reunion dinner on September 2nd. For more information, go to myevent.com/Kodiak73. That's myevent.com/Kodiak73. Or call Janelle at 425-879-7067, rather. That's 425-879-7067. Or Terry at 907-654-7713. Help spread the word, and they'll see you in September. Upcoming meetings in the Kodiak Island Borough include the Assembly's regular meeting on Thursday. That's happening in the Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On next Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting on Tuesday, June 6th. That's happening at the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. And a week from this Thursday, on June 8th, the Assembly will be having a special meeting followed by a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And don't forget, Assembly meetings are live streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they will send you live stream notifications. And I have it under good advisement that today is the day that the Kodiak Public Library Association's annual used book sale is selling their books for zero. Come on in, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. today. So it's any time now you want to get in there and get the last of them. And they are giving books away at least until 1 p.m. Just got our latest salmon weir count, the first weir count, the Carluck River for the 29th. They got 213 sockeye and one steelhead downriver. And in Upper Station, they counted 396 sockeye up the river. That was 213 sockeye in Carluck compared to 293 at this date last year, 586 at this date in 2022, zero on this date in 2021. And if you go all the way back to 2017, on this date, in the Carluck River, 53,941 sockeye went up the river in 2017. The Mountain Goat Marathon program is ongoing. The idea is to run or walk a full marathon in 26 weeks' time. It's for kids 8 to 15. Weekly sessions are held at the Joe Floyd Track. The last session will conclude during the KMXT Run the Rock race on October 14th. To register online or in person, go to the Kodiak Public Health Center or Kodiak Teen Center. It's free to participate and no running experience is necessary. And if you have any questions, you can also give them a call on the phone at 907-744-4976. Try not to forget to not poo in the water. DEC calls boaters to leave no trace, don't poo in the blue. With the summer boating season approaching, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Jason Bruhn would like to remind you that it is illegal to discharge untreated sewage anywhere in the state's freshwaters or marine waters within 3 miles of Alaska's shores. This includes dumping buckets, leaning over the rail, as well as bypassing the holding tanks of an onboard toilet, whether it is in the harbor, at anchor, on the fishing grounds, or underway. Commissioner Bruhn is quoted as saying, "Untreated human waste can harm both aquatic and human life by contaminating marine ecosystems and transmitting diseases to other people. Discharging untreated sewage is illegal and hurts our efforts to be good stewards of our environment."
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.